You know, very often we come to find folks who are doing a great job in helping businesses increase the bottom line, increase their top line, helping people to take a look at how they're doing sales and what they should be doing to re-energize their business. A friend of mine suggested that I invite Peter Hudson from the PH Advisory Group on to discuss what he's been doing over the last couple of years, because he's doing a lot of fine things with a couple of businesses. So I want to welcome Peter Hudson from all the way over in Temecula, Murrieta area. Peter, welcome.
How are you, Will? A belated Merry Christmas and a Happy New Year to you.
Well, thank you. Thank you. Tell us a little bit about what the PH Group does.
Well, we're primarily interested in working with business-to-business companies that are having problems really organizing their sales operation. And that by that I mean the process from the including the acquisition of a lead or an initial contact all the way through to the consummation of a sale and the after production or construction or whatever it happens to be of that particular product, and all the problems that are seem to be inherent within that long group or the long stretch of time from that. And so we get involved in all the different processes which involve really restructuring the company in terms of how we think it ought to function, the very guts that a company has to operate, how it's going to go about getting its sales and increasing the sales from existing companies. Those are two different functions, two different potential profit centers. How it measures and controls the whole process so it doesn't get in a position where it's sort of depending on what people tell them at management. They have a sales meeting that is sort of one where they might say, what do you think is coming in next week or next month, instead of being a strategic planning meeting on how do we get this account or how do we get that account, how do we build more buildings out of this one, and et cetera. And then the very important fifth step in that is to how do we support that whole sales process. Do we have a good corporate capabilities brochure that, regardless of whether we're using, reps or our own people or whatever, tells the story as a president only knows it, an entrepreneur only knows it, that can go to 3,300 miles away and convince three or more people that make the decisions or influence a purchasing decision that this is a company they really want to go to. And that includes in the whole sales support area, the area of using the internet, the websites, and a lot of other areas that get into the advertising and whether trade ads work or radio or TV or whatever it happens to be. So it's a whole group that goes together. And the final key, I think, and perhaps one of the most important ones, is what kind of people are you hiring? Who is going to build your company for you, and how do you build this team? And our company takes all that on in terms of a six-module program that we call the PHNA, the PH Advisory Group Processing Program. And we've been doing this for, well, I can tell you, way too long. I've been involved in three companies that we have run, and we have actually worked successfully with over 450 accounts worldwide. So that finally, I think I mentioned sometime in the past that I'm finally have graduated to being what they call a graybeard. And you can imagine when I first started, looking as a, 23-year-old young kid, people will tell me, would say, well, why don't you come back when you've sold some accounts, or why don't you send your dad or your father? Yeah, it was, but now I'm there. I finally have the gray hair and the look and the whole menagerie of things that you need as a in this business where you're advising companies on how they go about growing their business.
Well, that's great. I'm glad to hear that you're now a graybeard and joining the rest of us here.
Advantages and disadvantages.
Tell me a little bit about what you, when you work with these 400, you work with 450 accounts and many of them global. How do you work with them global? Is it all face-to-face?
It has to be really face-to-face. You can't do a lot of this. For instance, the first step that we go into when we first get contacted by a company is we look and we analyze that company by those six different standards to ascertain what we really need to do. And some of the areas that I think your audience may be somewhat interested in is the, is that company overly dependent on existing customers? We find that usually about 80% of the dollars that are coming in are from existing customers, and that's a good a way to have a lot of problems later. Now it's much worse than that. Some companies, it's only 2 or 3 or 4% that's coming in as new business as their sales decline. Another question we always look at is, and these are all self-imposed problems, I should say. We find that the majority of problems associated with a company come from management because management decides all the other parts of the puzzle. And so when, for instance, if there's a dependency on existing customers, well, they haven't put together an employment contract, an incentive program, and marketing and other systems to go after new accounts and incentivize people to have the same requirements as they do. We find that there's a lack, very big lack, of integrated mechanisms to minimize, or maximize rather, closing new accounts. It's not indigenous to the company, and with that feeling, we got to get new accounts. We have to get new accounts. We have to get new accounts. We find that a few accounts in many companies are the majority of the sales, or few markets are the majority of sales. So we look at all of these things and see, how they're doing and what we're faced with in trying to turn that company into a dynamic, proactive sales machine. We look at the existing sales shrinkage over the years, something that normally happens about 10 to 12%, but it can go as high as 10 to 18%. Another problem is the lack of strategic meetings and reports. And I mean it's something more than just a structure that has report on what you think you might be able to sell, or in one case we're working with now, they have sales meetings and sales reports that show what has happened in the last 45 days, which is just ridiculous. If you're not on top of it on a week-to-week basis with mandatory reports and mandatory requirements and people being able to tell you what the top 20 sales projected closings are, you're not going to do it. I mean, it takes a lot of detail that a lot of people don't want to get involved with. If you want, I can go on with a couple more areas that we find that are almost universal.
Sure. Tell me. Okay, what is it that CEOs should be thinking about these days?
Well, they have to get into the details of the minutia of what it means to sell an account. They need to know that it's not just make a call and send a letter or do whatever. It's a process. It's a science. It's an art form, and they have to energize and get the brightest people they possibly can, and then give them the guidance in order to grow their company in any climate. For instance, we are working with a substantial New York Stock Exchange company now. And we know because of what we've seen, the questions we've asked, the investigations we've already undergone, that we can probably double their sales just because of the systems or lack of systems that they have in existence now. And I always said I wanted to write a book if I ever had the time, you know, and the topic would be, it just isn't that hard. Another area that's everyone can that runs a company can understand is the order takers versus closers. You know, I believe, and I'm sure people will disagree with this, but you can't train somebody to be a closer in sales. You can train them on all the secrets and strategic planning and all the operations that they have to know, and they'll pick it up rapidly, but they have to have sort of that hunt mentality. They love the hunt, and one of the things, and they enjoy the kill, so that the whole process is fun to them. If it's not fun, if they hate getting up on the phone every day, if they hate following up letters and all that, they shouldn't be in this position. And they're not a closer. And you're not going to make people that aren't closers into that type of personality. Another problem is that people or companies tend to combine functions so that a person will be, let's say, an account manager. And they'll not only be responsible for selling an account, but they'll be expected to service it. Well, you know, this is just counterintuitive because, you know, what's easier, selling a new account or servicing an existing account? So all of a sudden you see your sales sliding toward the existing account, and the new accounts just sort of fade off. And they'll always tell you they're too busy to handle, you know, some of the new stuff because the existing ones are so important. We got to keep that from blowing up and having a big firestorm. So one of the things we look at is that the situation in this company? If it is, we know we have to separate sales from service. And in most cases, new sales from existing sales. So those two roles are distinctly separated. I've talked about the lack of structure and process and SOPs, standard operating procedures. This is a dilemma in business. We see many companies getting involved with special gurus and how to think without outside the box and how to do this and esoteric answers to this and that, whatever. But when you look back at it, they don't even have the structure that guides the sales group and the customer service group in what they have to do to acquire accounts and how the whole flow works together. They lack the weekly meetings and all those ancillary steps to getting that account. And then they don't have accountability, or they group it so that you have a team, which is one of the, I think, you know, again, this is going to be controversial, but I think that the term team is one of the most destructive words in the sales arena that there is. It's when you take a team and you put four or five people together and call it a team, and then everybody divides the commissions of the whole group, and in effect you've just diluted and eradicated the people that are really going to, you know, push and get sales, because out of that group of five, there are probably going to be two people that aren't going to make the grade and aren't working that hard, and they're part of the team, and it brings the whole apparatus down. And since the whole operation is treated as a team, you can't break out the division of individuals and the performance of individuals as opposed to the team. And I'll say the last thing I think is that you need to analyze a salesperson's performance on the basis of what they are adding to the company. If you view them as an asset, and this sounds cold and cruel, but they're an asset for the company, just like a piece of machinery. You buy a piece of machinery and say, okay, what's going to be my ROI, my return on investment, over a certain period of time for the acquisition of that asset? Well, people are assets also. And so they need to look at an individual and then say, okay, what did they bring in gross margin, not sales, gross margin, and then figure out what their overhead cost allocation would be. Are there accounts that they would have without them, or are they accounts that they got strictly as a result of that individual? What are their traveling costs? What are their non-utility costs? What are their lost opportunity costs? How many leads are they converting? What are they doing to acquire new leads? And you put this into a formula, and you can figure out really how productive your people really are. And many times it's a gruesome awakening. We're doing that for a client right now, and it's a very large account. And it's the first time, I talked to the COO yesterday, that they will have seen all of their sales group and know individually which ones are really performing and adding to the bottom line of a company, and adding significantly over that gross margin minus all the cost basis. Because if they aren't, then they're on the cost side of the equation.
Peter, tell me, how large a company is that? How large is the sales team that you're working with?
Well, the one I'm working with now, one that I just talked about, they have over 1,000 employees. So right away people think, well, this is just unique to large companies. I find that the better run companies are usually the smaller entrepreneurial ones, because they have to go to the bank and borrow or take money out of their savings account or get a second on their house, if that's possible nowadays, to put into the company. So they're much more involved in everyday occurrences. When you get a company with 1,000 individuals and different divisions and different offices and different units all over the place, it's very difficult to get it all together for many people. And so they sort of assume things, and they don't get into the dirty little details, because there's so many people and so difficult to do. The majority of our accounts that we have handled, I mean, if you look at our website, you'll see, you know, it's everything from a Trillion or, IBM or American Airlines, whatever, you know, in the niche markets that we're involved in, to the ma and pa operation that is the underpinning of our whole economic system, where they may have 30 employees or 40 employees or 25 or something, and they may be doing, 8, 9, 10 million, 15 million, even less than that. We have done work with many companies under 5 million that want to grow, and we provide all the structure and set everything up and then guide that company for that period, because most people didn't get into business to be marketing gurus or anything like that. Most of the people we deal with are usually engineers that view sales, view marketing as anathema. They don't see why they have to pay a salesperson. First, they don't understand why they have to pay a salesperson any salary at all until he sells something, of course, and that gets into the rep argument. And then they don't see why they have to pay somebody to sell something it's so obvious people should accept. After all, they engineered it and they put it together. And so that's a big, cultural thing that you have to overcome. Probably the majority of accounts that we deal with, they're manufacturing something, they're engineering something, they're putting something together, or they're in a processing environment where they're doing injection molding or something that you have to be a pretty good salesperson to be able to articulate, since it's a something inanimate. You can't go and describe a copier for instance, says it can do 23 color copies per minute. It's gray, it's whatever, you know, and it gets into the degree of complexity in a sales transaction.
Well, so tell me a little bit about what kind of increase you have given companies over the past couple of years. What have you done? How can you? What metrics can you talk about that you've helped companies achieve?
Well, I can tell you that there. If you looked at all the things that we do, let's look at the people, for instance, setting up the structure that is going to hold over for a protracted period of time. I'm talking about 5, 10, 15, 20 years. How they should structure their sales, their service, their whole operation, anything that's involved in acquiring a sales and keeping it. I would say that probably 98 to 99% of those companies are still operating with the same systems. In terms of using that to convert into sales, I would say that the vast majority have sales. You're asking me to a legal statement on the radio, but they usually see about a 20 to 25% increase in the first year to year and a half. And that's at a significantly higher ROI and because we build into our incentive plans margin modifiers so that the higher the margin that is on a product or process, the geometric higher commission that individual makes. And on average, that increases the margins for each company on an average 6% each year. So in this one particular case that I mentioned before, this New York Stock Exchange company, we got with them in they needed help in 2001, 2, and beginning of 3. We reorganized them to a great degree. It wasn't a Band-Aid. It was a total reorganization. Prior to that, they had been losing money the last 3 years. Within 1 year after our launch date, and that's the date after you get everything in place, you train people. If you have to recruit, you recruit the people. You do the whole thing and get it going, and then you launch it. It could be 6 months, could be 5 months, could be whatever. After you start work, they increased their sales by 16.5%, something that every member in this company, they're great people, that they remember. They always kid and they say it's approximately 16.58%. And their new sales went up 25%. And they have maintained a profit ever since that time at an increasing rate. And they've, tripled their sales over that period. And it gets tougher to triple sales when you have more zeros involved. And then they brought us in again because they had acquired an awful lot of companies, and suddenly, you know, the profits were getting thinner. There was a lot of questions on how they structure this in light of the economy. And, you know, I think what had happened was that people got sort of loose with the system. They weren't watching it as carefully as management needs to do. And some of the systems fell apart. Because it's tough to keep, up a process that holds people accountable. It's a lot easier to just go along with what it is if you're making money. And so we're in here again, and we expect, in this particular case, to triple their sales over the next 5 years. And this is a company worth hundreds of millions, so it gets a lot tougher to do. But again, we've gone through the same analysis, and I just gave you one part of this analysis. And from what we have seen in the research we've been conducting for the last 4 months, now we're ready to restructure or we call it revitalize. It's a friendlier, kinder word, I think. Revitalize the company into being, getting back into its aggressive nature, and getting into new fields, and anticipating the fact that I think we're going to have a real tough first quarter and probably the first half of next year for everything involved in manufacturing. And regardless of all the gurus and, oh, it's wonderful out there and all that, it isn't. It's pretty darn tough, and unless you have the grit to implement a tough but very fair sales system and watch it and care for it, set up the meeting, set up the system, set up the accountability, and just work it over and over and make it institutional to your company. So that, you know, if it's a sales meeting, the sales meetings are done absolutely every Monday at 12 o'clock or whatever it happens to be. And if there are too many people, then you stagger it. So to get to that point, you can fight this economy and you can actually increase dramatically, because a lot of people are scared and just withdrawing from the marketplace. They're cutting even salespeople. It used to be in B school, I remember, which was so long ago I can barely remember, but they said the first person that would go would be HR, the second was public relations. And then they started looking from there. And you see a lot of people on the street that used to be in sales, and I think that's frustration from presidents who don't have the systems, don't have the accountability, don't have the processes down to make people successful for them. So it's a win-win operation. So we're getting the benefit of a lot of that, unfortunately, but it's an unfortunate thing. It's not fun to see family-owned companies get in a situation they just don't know how to get out of, and it's worse than real estate. It really is.
Well, tell me a little bit about how you sell. How do you sell your services?
Well, that has depended over the last 40 years. One of the things we pioneered early on was direct mail. We produced over 6,000 different direct mail programs throughout the United States, in Europe, and also we set up the first marketing operation in Mexico prior to NAFTA, where we represented companies not only in the United States, but also Mexico and Canada, and sold between those companies as part of the NAFTA operation. We used direct mail even in for that, and it was extremely successful. Now, after September of 2001 and the hellacious bombing of the Twin Towers, all of a sudden our response rates went just right down through the tubes, where we were getting pretty darn good response rates. We test everything in 7 different markets before we ever use any format for a client. And all of a sudden, it went down by at least 80 or 90%. And that happened within 3 to 4 weeks. And we had no idea what was happening. We've never seen anything like it. And we looked and started doing some research, and the last time something like that happened was after World War I think it was December 7th, in Pearl Harbor. And what happened was that this time, as most people know, all of a sudden marketing of any type went just down through the tubes. People didn't know what to do. Direct mail response rates went way down, and the use of it went way down. Trade shows decreased by probably 20, 30, 40%. Everyone's very familiar with Comdex. Well, they went out of business, and now they're going back in a small fashion. The number of shows dropped off probably 30%, 40%. The number of magazines. The magazines we used to depend on for subscriber lists for direct mail, they've gone down by at least 50%. And names like Connors and Chilton and Elsevier and Reed and all the other ones, they've combined and reduced themselves in size to maybe 10% of what was there before. So we've had to come up with new ways of doing things, and we teach now in terms of generating leads for ourselves and for others. We do some seminars. We do a lot of key account marketing, which is going after specific types of companies that, you know, we've had familiarity with before over the years. And, I mean, we can just walk right in and we just know it cold. And they can be injection molding companies. They could be really any kind of company at all. And that has worked. But it's gotten a lot tougher. It's a great deal tougher. We're finding that where I have not, I mean, I think it's pretty common that I have not liked to give speeches or go on seminars or radio shows or anything else, because I'm, you know, aside from business, I'm pretty private. And but I started doing that again for some of my clients that asked, and boy, it's just like night and day. People are looking for information, looking for solutions, looking for how to solve this or whatever. And we have found that by finding those and being able to talk to those kinds of companies and selling them on the basis of we understand, you know, their problems. We've encountered them many, many times for over 40 years. We know how to solve them, and then we go show them case studies and then give them references. And we then put together a very inclusive program for them that usually runs about 20, 25, 26 pages, but covers everything that we're going to do, everything that we guarantee that we're going to accomplish. I think that makes them feel a lot better as well. But, you know, You got to get back to the basics. One of the things that I find companies are always trying to do is find out a new way to do this, a new way to do that, and have one after another gurus coming on with neat ways of doing this, and you know, the inner salesman, and God knows what else. And the problem with that is, you know, business is the same as it was 50 years ago. It really is. There are different ways of getting a message out. There are different ways of being able to communicate. But the basics are always there. They are no different. I'd like to claim, you know, ownership to some of these things. We put out a lot of new concepts, but they're based on old beliefs, old things that happen to work. And they still work if they're administered properly and followed up properly, and management backs them. And if it does, any company, regardless of how tough the market is, can really improve dramatically. And if they're willing to make the tough choices, if we, for instance, find that, you know, they have a lot of people that have been there a long time, and everybody loves Jim and Judy, and gosh, they've been great. They've had two babies with it or whatever. But we find that they're not contributing anything to the bottom line, and they really don't want to, and they're comfortable where they are, and the da 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 da. They have to be tough enough to say that if I don't take action, I'm hurting all the rest of the people that are trying to save the company. And that's where management has to stand up and get counted and do the obvious things that they would do if they were advising another similar company that wasn't their own. Does that make sense?
I think we lost Will's voice here for a second. Let's wrap it up here because I know we have another guest. Why don't you give us the information on how they can get in touch with you?
Well, I would say the first thing they might want to do is take a look at our website, and that's at www.ph-sales.com.
Okay.
And that'll give them a pretty good idea of who we are, what we've done, and if we're credible.
Okay. And is there a phone number to call?
There's another phone number, 951-249-9241.
Okay.
951-249-9241. And they can also email me at peter@ph-sales.com.
Okay. Well, thank you so much. We're running a little bit late
thank
here.
Thank you. I hope I didn't run too far over what I should have done.
No, you're just fine. All right.
Thank you so much.
We'll be right back with another guest right after this commercial break.
Large companies with complex sales channels have sophisticated lead management needs. They require customized lead management systems and services and integration with additional systems. That's why, since 1981, these companies have relied on SmartLead by AdTrack, the only full-service lead management company with customized systems for lead management, Salesforce automation, and analytics. These systems are managed by each client's dedicated account manager and are integrated with SmartLead's in-house marketing services that include a contact center, email marketing services, print services, direct mail and fulfillment, and an ISO-certified warehouse. SmartLead by AdTrack. 3 decades of pioneering lead management best practices and systems for complex lead management needs. For more information, visit our website at smartlead.com.
And now back to Will Crist and his next guest.
Well, we have a wonderful opportunity today to talk to somebody who's had a lot of experience in working with the federal government, especially in terms of IT money that the federal government spends. And Jimmy Baker tells me that the largest purchaser of IT infrastructure, computers, networking, everything to do with IT, the largest purchaser is the federal government. And Jimmy Baker has done a lot of work working with companies to help them to get federal government contracts in IT. He's taught lots of people how to do it. He's held their hands, and he's been extremely successful. Jimmy's written a book, and he's been a special author for people who are listening today. When they take a look at the website, they can have a special offer for his book, and I want to welcome Jimmy Baker.
Hey, Will. Happy New Year. Glad to be on the show tonight.
Well, super. Happy New Year to you. So tell me a little bit about what you have been doing in this world where there's so much money to be spent on IT infrastructure.
Well, primarily what I do and what I help companies with is I help them figure out where the government is going to spend money on IT purchases. And I either help them with marketing or creating a very tactical sales plan. And, you know, I do everything from my clients from giving them lots of market numbers to literally picking up the telephone and doing cold calls for them. And so, you know, right now, as we're looking out at the 2011 budget, you know, it's estimated at $79 billion that the government's going to spend. And one of the great things about the federal government is there's a great deal of information that's transparent to, say, someone who's a newcomer to the marketplace or someone who's been around a while but needs to get up to speed on it.
Well, what is it that who should be looking into supplying these things for the government?
Well, I specialize in technology, but any smart, innovative company, you know, that does everything from, you know, whether it's services, security, hardware, and software, you know, the government spending on those services. And, you know, the question that needs to be answered is why not your company rather than someone else's? And we're in a very different age of working with the government right now. During the, as the Clinton-Gore era came to an end, we saw a lot of these big contracting shops where the government would tell you exactly what they wanted, how they wanted it, what the specs were, and you just simply gave it to them. Well, things started beginning to change a bit in the Bush era, and what we started seeing is the government no longer said, we know what's best, we want industry best, what is the best out there. And even to the point right now, there's several agencies that I know of that are going out for what I call technology bake-offs, and they're putting up notices saying, please, new technology, come let us know how you work, show us how you can help fix our problems. So for the right company, it's a very lucrative market. And you know, one of the harder things, I think, with the federal market, and people always ask me this, where the low-hanging fruit is. It's, I think every time I talk or I'm on a show, I get that question. And, you know, frankly, it doesn't really exist. If I knew where it was, I'd go pick it myself and cash in off of it. Most federal deals that you're going to work are probably going to take about 6 months to a year. It's a longer time to entry, and has a lot to do with the budget cycle, funding get inappropriate, but what you typically get when you get an award in a government world is you generally get a base year with four option years, so you're getting a four-year contract that's set, and that's a lot that you can do in terms of planning your company's growth. That, you know, generally getting a five-year contract is something that you can build and grow a, you know, good piece of business off of. So, Will, let me slow down a second here, and you know, as we begin to talk about this market, and see what are the questions that you might have for me.
Well, tell me, I'm curious what companies would find this helpful, lucrative, and maybe it has to do with what kind of projects are there that the government is looking for. Is this just any IT company?
Yeah, it is any IT company. So the government, I'm going to give you some details, and the folks listening in, you know, I'll be happy to give Will some links on this. I know if you're driving, you don't have a chance to get a pen and paper, but the government buys everything from hardware, LCD projector panels, licenses of Microsoft Office to software for security, databases, virtualization, you name it, the government's buying it. They also buy the services, so the ability of a systems integrator to come in and say, here's a program manager and you know, X number of engineers that will actually work this. So anyone that is touching technology nowadays would definitely have a play. The big things that we're seeing and the many, you know, discussions I have with CIOs across the country is virtualization is still a big hot topic. Cloud computing and all that, I mean, is computer that, you know, applications that are shared that people access from different locations. And the cloud continues to be a huge issue, and what's more important in the cloud is knowing if your information that you're accessing is secured. So software applications in the cloud and security continue to be big, huge drivers in the 2011 federal market.
Well, Jimmy, tell me, what is it that would cause the government to award a contract to a particular company?
Generally, the bottom line, it's very similar to the commercial world. I mean, they want to know you. They want to look at the risk factor with you. So a lot of times when I'm working with companies, say it's a smaller business, the government's going to look at your size, and they're going to evaluate a risk factor. You know, if it's a 25-person company, you know, roughly, you usually see that like $2.5 million contract a year. You know, if it's a 5-person company, they might say, well, can afford to take a risk here up to $100,000 a year. So they'll look at that. A couple things that happens when you go after, one, they're looking for innovation. They're looking to find someone who understands the problem that they need to get fixed. And I'm going to talk in a moment where your listeners can go and find out what the problems are, and we'll share that with them tonight. The other thing that, you know, frankly, wins a lot of business, when push comes to shove, it's awarded on cost. And there are a lot of IT companies out there. So, you know, we hear these stories of the government buying $100 hammers and $200 toilet seats. But let me just warn everyone out there. The federal government is one of the smartest buyers in the world. They're sharp, and they get incredible prices, and they buy massive amounts of technology. Where I would encourage your listeners to begin looking. So, you know, you're driving in your car, you're hearing this guy going, "Hey, there's $80 billion that the government spent on 2010. They're budgeting, anticipating they're going to spend $79 billion in 2011. And if I do anything with technology, I should check into this." So here's what I recommend for most companies to do to get started. There's actually a way you can go out and look at the federal budget, and it's literally about, it's in an Excel spreadsheet, and it's about 6,500 line items. They break it down by each agency, and you can do a keyword search. So let me back up again. If you happen to be at home and have a pen and paper, take a note on this. There is a website, and it's www.whitehouse.gov. And what you want to do is you want to go out there, and there's a section under the Office of Management and Budget, OMB, eGov, where they have all the documents. And there's a report on IT spending for 2011. And you literally, I've got it up on my screen right now. You click on this wheel, and you download this big, giant spreadsheet. And it gives you a bunch of numbers by agency and what they're going to be spending. Once you have that spreadsheet up, make a list of what your company does. Let's just say you're a systems integrator. You do security, hardware, software, cloud computing, virtualization. Maybe you specialize in Oracle. You make a list of all the different things that you do, and you shortlist 15 keywords. And literally, this is a spreadsheet, and you can do the Control-F feature and go through the spreadsheet, and you can track down where the government is going to spend money on what you do. And it's a long process, but it's one of the quickest ways you can get an idea of how much they're going to be spending on what your company offers.
Really? It's that simple?
Simple yet hard. And this is where it gets really interesting. And, you know, in the book, I delve into this in great detail for folks, because the book was really written for someone that's never looked at the federal market and is very action-oriented like I am. I don't want to read a bunch of theories and have to figure out how to do it. I want to, you know, step by step. The government actually tells you, they give you two different numbers in the budget. They give you one number that's called steady state, SS. That's the number in the budget that accounts for all the people, lights, buildings, hardware, software, wherever that is. But then they give you this really neat number, and this is where the gold is in the. It's called DME. That stands for Development, Modernization, and Enhancement. This is the new money flowing into a government program. And what's great about new money is that a lot of times you can find a budget line item where there's no incumbent. It's new money being put in to fix the problem. And those are fantastic places for any company to start. The other thing that one of the great things that happened, whether you love George Bush or you hate him, he did something really neat during his administration. He went to all the CIOs of the agencies and said, "Listen, in the commercial world, you have to have a business case, and that basically tells either the shareholders, the people in the company, what the investment's doing, how it's working." He goes, "Well, government's got to do that. You can actually go out." So let me just back up a gear. You go out to this website at whitehouse.gov. You do the keyword search like I'm telling folks to do, and somebody finds 8 opportunities in the Department of Agriculture, and they're going, "Holy cow, and I even found some of this new DME money that Baker's talking about. This is excellent. I need to go do this." Well, there's another step that you do. The government publishes something called the 300. This is actually Form 300A, and it's what agencies fill out their business case. And what's really cool, when you find a deal you're interested in, chances are you can go out to the chief information officer's webpage of that agency. You can look at the business case, and what's awesome about the business case is generally they're about 4 pages to 10 pages long, and they actually break down the investment, and they tell you how much they spent on services, hardware, and software. So you can actually get an insight into the deal, how much is actually going to be worth to your company. So there's a lot of amazing tools out there, and I could go on and on and on about how you the different places that you can go and look, but just doing those two things, you can find out a great deal about the federal customer, what the problems and challenges are, and, you know, whether your company plays in it.
All right. So tell me, what would a $40 million company, systems integrator, what would they do if they've never done business with the government before?
I would, being the size of that type of company, they obviously are going to have a story to tell the government about how they're doing this commercially. And what I would, this is what I would recommend for anyone. I typically talk that the government has 26 vertical markets. They're in the healthcare business. They're in insurance. They're in property management. If I were this technology company, this fictitional company we're talking about, I would look at the verticals that I'm in. You know, do you do IT for people that do agriculture? Do you do it for banking? What is the vertical that you're in? And what I would then figure out is, okay, so we, let's just say, for example, this IT company does a ton of stuff with banks. They're the best at, you know, transferring money, making sure it's secure, making sure online transactions are good. They're the best at it. I would then go into the government, and I would look at all the areas that the government does online transactions with, and I would make a plan. I'd go out and look at the budget numbers, and I would come back and say, okay, we know that the government's going to spend X amount of million or billion in this area this year. And then I would go down, and I'd look at all who all the CIOs are in those agencies, and I would literally pick up the phone and call them and say, you know, we understand that you're going to be making an investment of X million into this new banking technology, whatever it is. We've been doing this successfully with, you know, whether it's Bank of America, Chevy Chase, you name the bank, and we'd like to come in and demonstrate how we could help you do this. And that's the kind of play you need to think about. So again, you know, new company, look into this. Look what's in your backyard. Who are you doing your work for? Is it property management? Is it insurance? Is it hospitals? Because chances are the government's buying all this stuff, and you can take that commercial story and tell a story about it. One of the most interesting stories, Will, that I remember. This is about 10 years ago, and I was working with a Canadian software company, and they helped. They had a process improvement software, would be the easiest way to say it. And we had a meeting with the Department of Homeland Security. And I remember we prepared for this meeting. We were sharp. We knew all their issues. And we ended up walking in and only having a couple minutes to talk to the CIO. And the client I was with looked up at her map of her enterprise on the wall, pointed, said, you know what? Campbell Soup and Harley-Davidson have this exact problem. Here's how we fixed it for them. Here's how we can help you. So, again, commercial relevancy is a big deal now in the government world, and it's a good way to break in the door.
So if a company was working with a lot of hospitals, then they could begin looking into where, the Veterans Administration hospitals?
Yeah. You know, and the other thing with hospitals right now, one of the big issues that's going on is CMS, you know, Center for Medicaid and Medicare Services. If you're an IT company and you help the government with billing records, maybe you can help the government figure out where fraud is in those records. Maybe you can show the government how you've managed outpatient surveys for hospitals, how you've managed, you know, inpatient work. I mean, different things that you can show them. Chances are you could sit down and look at that, what you've done commercially, and figure out, you know, where and whom to go to. And a lot of this information is public. The other thing that I wanted to share with your listeners, so, and I know we're talking about a lot of stuff here, but, you know, real quick, you know, keep it kind of simple. Go out and look at the budget. You can go out to the CIO's page and look at the business case. The other thing that you can do with any federal agency is you can look at what's called the Government Accountability Office, or the Office of Inspector General, GAO and OIG. The government has tons of acronyms. And a lot of times you can read these reports and you can find problems to solve. And I've literally helped clients win business by finding a problem we can go fix. So let's just say we're talking about this company that does IT for hospitals. Let's say you go out to the Office of Inspector General at Health and Human Services, and you just you start doing some random keyword searches on security, fraud, abuse, and all of a sudden you start reading about these problems that they're having. You're going, well, holy cow, we can help fix this. You can actually begin to find the people that are in charge of the problem through the OIG offices and go make a presentation to them and literally show them. The other thing, Will, that I tell a lot of people, I'm going to kind of switch gears here. The other thing that's really important when you're beginning to deal with the government, there's a couple different ways that the government is buying from people these days, and I think it's important that your listeners are aware of this. One of the big ways the government goes out is they do full and open competition. There is a website called FBO.gov. That's FedBizOps. And you can literally go out there and do research and find out, you know, whether it's Department of Transportation or Labor or Justice, wherever. You can search and find out what deals they have coming out. The other thing, how the government buys from a lot of folks, is what's called a GSA schedule. And for IT purchases, it's Schedule 70. And what the GSA schedule is a really awesome, awesome tool. When the government uses the GSA schedule, they can award them best value. They don't have to go out through this lengthy procurement process, and they can award to you right there on your schedule. And smart technology companies have been using that for a long, long time, making that work. The other way that you can sell to the government is an unsolicited proposal where they haven't announced a need, and there's something called the Federal Acquisition Regulation, Section 15, that details how you submit an unsolicited proposal. Then the last way, so full and open, GSA schedule, unsolicited proposal. The last way, and this is something for your listeners that are wanting to get into the government game that they need to really pay close attention to. The government started almost, if you think of a Costco type of thing, a lot of agencies started saying that we're going to set up one contract for the next 10 years and we're going to buy everything through it and we're going to give it a name. Homeland Security has a big one out called Eagle. There's CIOSP3, and these things are what are called GWAC, G-W-A-C, Government-Wide Acquisition Contract. The tough part about these GWACs is you will spend a good amount of time getting ready, and when you get awarded, what you're really getting is a license to hunt. You're not actually getting money, but what we've seen, you know, just studying the last 10 years of different GWACs, the government will pour billions and billions of their procurement dollars into these GWACs because it's an easy way for them to procure things. And basically what they do is they award it to a select, 10, 20 companies to be able to have the rights to go and sell their services through this. So, again, those are four sort of ways that the government you can buy and sell with it.
So what should a company do if they want to get into government business? Would it be talk to you?
I would, and I would be happy, as a courtesy to you and your show, to give them, 15, 20 minutes on the phone. I could talk to them. The book is an excellent guide, but again, what I would really do, and it's, and Will, you and I have been doing sales for a long time, and even though we're in a tougher economy and there's, a gazillion sales books out at Borders right now, how to sell in tough times, you and I both know, selling is about relationships. It's about doing your homework and legitimately solving a problem that makes either improve someone's process, makes their life better, or saves them money, and it's how you present that. So, I'm a big believer in doing a lot of homework and really understanding that, when I pick up the phone to call a senior government executive, I'm able to articulate to them, what my client's unique selling proposition is, why they should stop and let these people come in and talk to them. And, a lot of times, Will, I get people say, oh, well, you've been doing government for 20 years. You must have a really big Rolodex. Well, there are certain agencies where I know people, but let me just kind of put things in perspective. You know, the government has like Fortune 50 companies, the agencies. They're the size of Chrysler, GM. And many times I'm going into places where I don't have relationships. We're going in cold. And what we're really trying to figure out is what are the challenges, where they're focusing their money on, who are the people that hold the purse strings, getting an audience with them and making an informed decision. Do we bid something through a proposal? Do we give them an unsolicited? Do we try to do it through GSA? And working with, you know, people to legitimately close business. So let me back up a gear. Answer your question. I would welcome a chance to talk with any of your listeners. You know, how we can do that. They can reach me at james@jamesjbaker.com. What I would advise them is go to whitehouse.gov, and you can put together, you can look at the budget. And, Will, you know, one of the things that I might do for you, I might whip together, you know, a brief PDF file, and we can post it on your site, and it'll be kind of a 8-9 step for any of your listeners that just want to try to figure out how to go into this.
Okay. Well, that sounds like that would be a helpful thing. So they can contact you on your email, which was, again?
james@jamesjbaker.com.
They could call you.
They can reach me directly at area code 703-303-4233.
One more time?
703-303-4233.
Or they can take a look at the PDF that we're going to post on.
Yeah, I will. I will shoot something over to Paul, your producer, by the end of the week. Get that out for them, and we can let them know that there. But you know what I want to remind people. I was a newspaper ad salesman when I got into the federal game. I did not have computer experience at the time. This was 20 years ago. I did not have a lot of knowledge how government worked, but what I had was the ability to get out and talk with people. And, you know, for people going, oh, we don't know the government, we don't know the rules, you know, remember your sales, your background. It's about, you know, pursuing, meeting objections, identifying, taking the client through that process. The sales process is a bit longer with the feds because of the way the funding works. The other thing I would remind your listeners, Will, is, you know, the government is going home for the holidays now. After Dr. King's birthday, you're going to see a lot of activity. The government runs on a fiscal year, October to October. And typically, the government, the president has till the first Monday in February, I think, to get the budget numbers out. So you will see spring and summer, a lot of spending activity. So, you know, now's the time to start looking into all this.
All right. Well, that's wonderful. I really appreciate you taking the time to be with us and giving IT people an insight into how they can. How big did you say this government budget for IT
was? You know,
I'm
looking at the numbers right now. I actually have it up on my screen. And last year, what was enacted was $80 billion. They're anticipating $79.3 for 2011. And then
well, it would be interesting
and
to see how
saying, Will, of the new money, like brand new money that's not tied to any program, is $10.9 billion. That's a lot of money out there.
It'd be interesting to see how IT companies in Orange County get a slice of that. Thanks a lot for being with us, Jim.
Hey, it was my pleasure. And again, I appreciate the opportunity to come on the show.
Great. Have a happy new year.
Same to you, Will. Thanks a lot.
And there we are. Lots of opportunities still out there for us, some in this huge IT budget that the federal government has. And we have a direct line to an expert who can help IT companies who are interested in looking at that. He'd be happy to spend a little time with you, and maybe it will help you in the coming year. Also, when talking to Peter Hudson, sales, having a strategy, building accountability, making sure you have the best possible team that you can have, getting really clear on what you expect your salespeople to do, and then holding them accountable for what they said they would do. Important parts of how we move forward into prosperity in Orange County. It's the Pilgrim on the 405 wishing you and yours a happy and prosperous new year. We look forward to talking to you next week again in this wonderful world of 2011. Looking forward to great times.
You've been listening to the one and only Pilgrim on the 405, only on OCTalkRadio.net.